I didn't have, I honestly, I really, again, I should be prepared. This comes every single time.
And no, I'm not, I know. Like, I know. It's me too. Like, as you're saying this right now, as those words were exiting my mouth, I was like having a mad scramble in my brain. Like, oh fuck. Oh fuck. I'm going to have to do this in a second.
You're like, why did I bring this up even? Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome back, boys and girls. This is Tofuri Gator. I am joined by Zlatan Diego. Zlat, what's up, buddy?
Hey, feeling pretty good. Got a nice win under our belts. So 1-0 feels a lot better than anything else.
Hell yeah. We are hammerless at the moment. He might be joining us at some point midstream here. You know, we're crossing streams, as one does. We're going to jump right in to game review from this past weekend. 51-35, Florida went into Oxford and got a decisive win. It was a bit of a Big 12 shootout type of situation. It was exciting.
Yeah, I had a great time. And you're going to get two perspectives here. You'll have Tofuri's perspective. He got to watch the game from the TV, and I believe even rewatch some of it. And mine, where I just watched it live. And got to experience the flavor of the Ole Miss fan base and their reactions, along with the live game itself. So,
in one sentence, how would you describe the flavor?
You know, it's one sentence. It's tough.
okay,
I never say anything in just one sentence. Yeah, I'll just drop what I got though. It was a different atmosphere because if you've been listening, I go to most of the Ole Miss home games, so I'm very experienced with the Grove and all that. Obviously, no tailgating period. You'll have that everywhere. It was quieter. They did not pump in any crowd noise from what I heard, which was weird to me. That didn't make sense to me. If you're able to, why wouldn't you?
It seemed quiet on TV.
It was quiet. There were no real people like yelling, period. I mean, it was just, you know, cheering for plays, but not necessarily trying to get in the heads of anybody. And you know, they were actually having a pretty good time. They were scoring, obviously. So, and I think they have very low expectations, and we looked good out there. So it's not, I mean, no one likes to lose, but I think they were pretty pleased with their performance, and I got to enjoy it because it felt pretty in hand most of the game, if not the entire time, even if they were closer than I would have liked them to be.
Yeah. At no point was I concerned that we were going to lose that game. It felt, from the beginning, it felt like things were in control.
Yeah, they really did. We had a good game plan. We were clearly the better team overall. Kiffin came out with a good game plan, so he's a pretty smart coach, I would say. hard not to give him some credit there. Ole Miss fans were quite booey from the very beginning. We won't get political or anything, but they booed immediately during the whole kneel down with both teams, and that was expected. And I'm trying to remember the exact play. It was maybe a pass interference or one they wanted.
Was it the 15-yard personal foul for throwing Trask to the ground or driving him to the ground or whatever?
Maybe. It was a combination. I know there were a couple of calls in a row or within a few plays of each other where that happened. So it was something, but they got really ticked off, and it might have been around there. And they booed the entire rest of the drive. So, you know, respect for that. I enjoyed that thoroughly. So that was, yeah, it was cool. I had a good time. I have a story I want to tell.
Okay.
Because it's a nice little opener. I don't know how interesting it is, but I found it fascinating. So they have limited attendance, obviously, at all these games, and they have some restrictions on just how the whole food and drink thing works, everything like that. Obviously, they're trying to stay to show that they're trying with preventing any spread and, you know, being safe and all that. So one of the things that they allowed, since water fountains are banned, is they allowed every fan to bring in a bottle of water, which is cool. You know, that's really nice. So all of us, we each brought in our own bottle of water because you're allowed to, and why not? So you have it just in case. And at the end of the game, I hadn't touched mine because they sell beer in Oxford. take a note, Scott Strickland. I'm sure you listen to this podcast along with the other ones that you listen to. So, and I know we had tweeted at you about that, but, yeah, let's get that beer going. But anyways, I was focused on that, obviously not my water. So I had that left over. My wife took the water bottle on the way out. So we're leaving the stadium with one water bottle left, completely full. We get to the bottom and there are, security guards at the gates, and she stops my wife and says, "You can't take that out of here." My wife's like, "The fuck? Well, no, I brought this in. It's just my water bottle." She's like, "No, I'm sorry. You can't, it doesn't matter. Can't take it out." I was just completely dumbfounded. Like, why the hell can you not take a water bottle that you brought in outside of the stadium? And then I started to think, like, okay, first of all, what purpose does that actually serve? Does that do literally anything? No. Anything whatsoever? I mean, it's the most fucking pointless rule. Even if you have stuff actually in the stadium that you buy, why the hell can't you take it out? You're spending like 10 times as much to get stadium food and all that. Again, who is it hurting when you take it out of the stadium? Are you going to like screw up concessions that are sold outside of the stadium? Are they worried about the Einsteins across the street? I mean, it made zero sense to me. And I wish, honestly, I kind of like just caught the end of this, so I didn't really get to say anything. But I was just like, my first thought is when I finally realized what was going on, like, what's she going to do? Like, drag you back into the stadium? Is she going to put you in stadium drill? Like,
yeah, is she going to write you a football ticket?
Uh-huh. And this is a big Mississippi woman that was yelling or doing her authority and, putting her force around or whatever. Is she going to chase you down? Really? Like, run after you? So it was just a very unique experience. And, again, just one of those things like, man, there are some dumb fucking rules. And I don't even know if it was an actual rule or not. But sometimes, maybe just use common sense. What the fuck does that accomplish? Like, why are you even doing that? That does nothing for anybody. I wanted her to, instead of throwing the water bottle, because she made her throw it away. And it was a cheap-ass water bottle. It's just the principle. And I wanted her to just take the water and dump it on the lady and run. That would have possibly gotten you into stadium jail. But it would have been worth it. It would have been satisfying.
It would have been worth it for you to be able to laugh at it. Probably much your wife, but even if that is a rule, like if you're the employee, like how much are they paying you to enforce that rule? Like who cares? Just wave people through. Yeah. And, like
I'm sure she's getting paid a ton to watch the gates on the way out. It's absolutely just mind blowing. So
the terrorists, you know, they brought the bomb in with them and they hid it in this water bottle. And their dastardly plan is to then sneak it back out of the stadium.
Like, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't want to blow up this section of the stadium. I'd rather get this spot in the parking lot where everyone's a little spread out and right. You know cars have already left and all that. But it's okay. We take some cars out in the process. We're really gonna fuck this place up. I have nothing. And again, all I can think is, what are you gonna do about it? And again, like, I don't know why my wife threw it away. I think she just wanted to get out of there and she was just not wanting to be around people. But I wish she had just taken the water bottle and just kept walking. Like, again, she's not gonna grab you and drag you back in. So that's my story. It's my water bottle story. I do remember it.
Yeah. Nice. So yeah, I mean there's nothing that we're going to say here that hasn't already been said. The amount of analysis that came out like almost immediately following the game was pretty impressive. We have got like an army of armchair analysts in this fan base, and it's great because there's so much good content. So I don't feel like we really need to like break it down play by play by play. Let's talk about offense first. What we saw from the Gator offense, impressive. I mean, it was 642 total yards, 446 passing yards, almost 200 yards on the ground.
Just take a minute and close your eyes, everybody, unless you're driving, and just picture yourself where you were 2 or 3 years ago on this day, and imagine getting 600 yards of offense against an SEC team.
Yeah.
You can't. Yeah, it's just insane the kind of turnaround that we have. And it's not like it's not really with that many different players that are making it happen. We're making it work. And I don't think anybody in the entirety of Gator football would honestly believe that if McElwain was here running the show with Trask, the same quarterback, that he'd be even close to what Mullen's doing. So pretty awesome.
Yeah, this felt like what Gator football is supposed to feel like to me.
Yeah.
You know, this feels, we were talking about this on the Discord, and this feels like sort of like mid-90s Spurrier type of deal, where we have the propensity to get into a shootout. And, you know, sometimes with Spurrier, you lived by the sword and you died by the sword, but goddamn it, you had a sword. and that's kind of what this game felt like to me. And, like, that's awesome. That's what I want it to be. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think it was great. And I know that in our pregame stuff, I was the Ole Miss insider having watched the team, and I think I'd pointed out, I don't think they have a single player who could cover Kyle Pitts, and they proved me very right. They covered him. They double and tripled him the whole game from what I saw. I mean, he was blanketed, and you know, everybody else was open for us, so that was nice, but Trask still was throwing balls at him, which I love. But honestly, I did notice a lot of those tighter passes that he was throwing to Pitts, they're right on the money. That was kind of a nice feeling too. Like he was fitting it in there, and he had a couple bad passes, but it wasn't on those ones where he's like trying to, oh, I'm getting over this linebacker and under the safety. He was really accurate.
Trask was so sharp. I mean, that was, we had all hoped that he would be improved somewhat, but I felt like he was noticeably improved even from last year. Just like so precise with the placement of these passes. There were a couple of those that we talked about, you know, the interceptable passes. But I mean, like overall, just really, really strong performance from him. It's a shame that the kid whose name I can't remember at Mississippi State did what he did.
Oh, Costello? Elvis Costello. I know it's KJ, but I'm going to call him Elvis.
Yeah, so. Sure. Elvis. It's a shame that he went off like he did, because it feels like it overshadowed what would have been like a tremendous, like, headline grabbing performance from Trask.
And I mean, we still grabbed a ton of headlines, but maybe this is kind of nice, you know. We're not going to catch anybody off guard, but maybe a little more under the radar. I'm kind of grasping for straws here, but
you know, no, yeah, I mean, that's a solid point.
We'll go with it.
Sure. Keep expectations somewhat lower. I mean, he looked great. The running game looked really good. I was really happy with how the offensive line looked. Somebody shared a copy of the PFF snap count for all of the individual players. I think it was 3-2-1. Shout out to him for sharing that with us. And it was all five of the starting offensive linemen played every snap. There was no variation there.
Yeah, I was looking for it during the game, and obviously it's hard to remember to do that, and it's hard to see. But
right, yeah,
that was consistency. That's really nice. And yeah, they played well comparatively to what we had last year. So
for sure.
I was pleased. I think I'd said I'd wanted a certain number of rushing yards, but who cares? Like we were just gunning the downfield. The run was working. What more do you want? So
yeah, so on the offensive line, they got really good push in the run game. That didn't seem to be a difficulty on any play that I saw. I mean, they were getting push and getting upfield. Brett Heggie was named the offensive lineman of the week in the SEC, and he looked really good. The only issue I noticed was Gene DeLance is still the weak point in pass protection. He got beat on three or four plays that I saw. And that, I guess that would be the right side of the line with him and Stuart Reese. They seemed to have what may have been communication issues, and it might just be that Gene DeLance sucks. I really don't know.
maybe a nice, sweet combination of both.
Yeah, probably a combo. But that's really the only weak spot that I saw on offense as a whole was Gene DeLance.
Yeah, everybody played well. The skill positions, they all had a pretty good game from what I saw. And obviously quarterback, offensive line was, again, impressive. So that was nice. And just one thing to keep in mind here, Ole Miss probably has the worst defensive line in the SEC.
Yeah,
it's hard for me to imagine. I didn't really watch much of the Vanderbilt or Arkansas games, so maybe they're on that level, but Ole Miss is bad. They don't have depth. They didn't have size. They were tiny. So just keep, I guess, just stay level-headed before going and dropping all the money on our offensive line being dominant. But
for
passable,
sure.
Passable is still good. That's better than last year in some cases. Yep.
Yeah, it looked better against a shitty SEC defensive line than it did against FCS teams last year. So that's improvement. Yeah.
You take it.
We saw a nice healthy mix of Malik Davis and Damian Pierce. Malik Davis looked back to the Malik Davis of yesteryear. He looked really good, really shifty, and he had some nice catches as well out of the backfield. I think he can be a real weapon in that regard.
Yeah, it seems that we were using him for receptions, and then we had Naquan Wright catch one or two also. So I'm wondering, maybe that's holding Pierce back a little bit. Did we throw to Pierce at all?
Yes, he is listed as having one catch for 2 yards.
Okay.
I didn't notice if he had another target. But yeah, that could be, because with Davis and Wright, I believe they both lined up in the slot as well at certain points. They got motioned out to the slot.
And I think we all knew when he was coming in that Wright had that kind of ability. He's just more shifty all around, just a kind of a South Florida athlete, so to speak. So, but it's really nice to see Davis do that. That's pretty cool.
And I'm wondering if going forward, it seemed like Pierce's carries were somewhat backloaded in the game. I didn't get a count quarter by quarter, but I'm wondering if the plan may be to an extent to have Davis run earlier in the game and then have Pierce come in and be the closer and just be the battering ram when defensive players are tired, to just like run through them.
That's how I want to use Pierce. I mean, he's that guy that can just destroy the Thunder in the Thunder and Lightning.
Yeah, for sure.
Dominating the second half. So I thought we were going to do that too for this game. I mean, we were up, and I guess we just never pulled away enough to really start just grinding it out on the ground, testing out our run game. But
yeah, I would agree. Kadarius Toney, he looked really good as a receiver. I'm going to have to eat some crow on that, because we had talked a few episodes ago, probably a couple months back now, about how we weren't necessarily writing him off, but we would be surprised if he was able to put it together and be a meaningful receiver who runs real routes. And I mean, so far he looked really, really sharp in that regard.
Yeah, we mocked him, or a lot of people did mock him, us included probably. And you know, we were talking, oh, he's not focused enough. He's worried about his rap career. Maybe he'll go be a rapper and he can just focus on that. But I guess he proved that these guys are people, and maybe they can have other interests while still improving at football. So
let's not get carried away.
For once in my life, I'm going to take a lesson from this story and not apply it ever again. I'll just say that it's a lesson. One of you can learn from it, and we'll move on with life. But yeah, he looked really good. I'd agree there. I was impressed. He was running pretty good routes. And honestly, I know we had the snap count for the receivers too, but it seemed like Toney, Grimes, and Copeland with Pierce and a running back, or Pitts and a running back. That's just kind of the much more of a base formation. And I don't think we had a real base formation last year, since we just had so many guys rotating.
Yeah.
So it was a little different, and we still rotated, but having Toney actually able to consistently be a number one receiver, that's pretty big if he can do that.
Yeah, for sure. Emery came in on a few plays. I guess this would be possibly in the negatives column. The offensive side of the ball, he threw the one atrocious interception where he just chucked it up. He threw the ball 3 times. He had one nice throw, and the other two were complete garbage. I remain skeptical about his ability to develop into, well, I mean, he'll develop into a starter, I'm sure, but like, I don't really buy the ceiling being there for him. I think that Anthony Richardson is going to be the better option even next year. And, you know, we'll see if Dan can pull the trigger on putting in the younger player. But I'm not real hyped for Emery at this point.
There's no reason to be. He was highly rated. He's shown he has some rushing ability, but it's not anything spectacular that we've seen either. Like, it's not like he's Tony out there running. And if he was, then, I mean, I'd be like, just get him out there. Let him learn to throw. He'll figure it out. But, yeah, I'd agree. It's hard to expect that it's hard to expect much out of him right now. It's not like I'm counting on him to just be some superstar next year. So we're going to have some questions once Trask is gone. You'll always have that when you lose a superstar first-round draft pick like Kyle Trask. But, yeah, it'll be interesting. I guess we'll see how many more snaps he gets throughout the year. Does that increase? Does it stay the same? Does it start to drop? Does Anthony Richardson get a few? Because if any of those things happen, or if the wrong things happen, we could see Emery leave on his own anyways.
Yeah.
Might see writing on the wall there. So he either earns it himself, or he might just find a new spot where it'll work out for him better.
Absolutely. We saw some Trent Whittemore. He looked pretty good. He had the one lunging first down where he fumbled out of bounds, or potentially didn't fumble. I'm not actually sure what the ruling was there. But, yeah, I mean, he looked good. It's so, so difficult to stop this offense when there are so many big dudes on the field, as we noted. I mean, it's just like it's such a pick-your-poison type of situation for the defense. So many dudes out there who are 6'4 or taller at once.
It really is. And when you have when you have two guys in Pitts and Grimes out there with that combo of size and speed alone, not many teams have players that can come close to covering either one of them, let alone both. I mean, look at LSU this past week. Do we think that any of their corners are going to be able to handle something like that?
No, not the ones that they were playing this week. I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe when Stingley is back from the hospital. Yeah. But
it's hard to picture very many teams having the tools necessary to stop those guys. And then you add in the speed of Tony, or being able to slot in some of these other tall receivers that we have. It's a nice problem to have. So
yeah,
I'm pretty pleased.
Billy Three Chins has done an excellent job of coaching those guys up there, Marty.
Yeah, he's done a very good job of that. It's hard to argue that. And, you know, if Whittemore plays like maybe, I mean, if he continues to play well, then maybe I'll give some credit to Billy's recruiting too. Probably not. Let's be real. I'm not going to, but you know,
no.
I'm trying to drop some teasers here. I'm trying to give it. I just can't do it.
We're trying, Marty. We're trying.
We're doing it. Yeah. I feel sick. I'm going to go.
All right. Is there anything else that you want to talk about on the offensive side of the ball?
Yeah. Yeah, there is actually.
Okay.
Pro Football Focus.
Mm.
Before the season, they had all 130 starting quarterbacks ranked.
Mm-hmm.
And we have one Kyle Trask ranked number 48, I believe, if my memory serves correctly. Before the season.
I believe so. Yeah.
As a 48th best passer. And everybody in Gator Nation is like, that's a stupid fucking ranking. That is a dumbass ranking. And I just wanted to go through some of the guys that they put ahead of our boy Kyle Trask. Like number 4, Sam Howell, who had 2 interceptions against the vaunted Syracuse defense. Kellen Mond, number 16. Mond was fantastic in almost losing to Vanderbilt. But he had 189 yards and a touchdown. Spencer Rattler, complete garbage. The dude never played a down. They had him in number 20. And I could go through all day on this. And while I want to, I don't know if it's really good pod to start naming all these guys or whatever. But the point is, what the fuck kind of ranking was that? It was stupid and asinine then. It is absolutely stupid now. I have much more offensive things to say about it. But
even though
we are not a G-rated podcast, we have our limits. So I will just stop it right there and just point out that also Jarrett Garantano and Miles Brennan were both ranked ahead of Kyle Trask as well.
Dear God. Wow.
Yeah. So keep that in mind when looking at Pro Football Focus and really riding those rankings. That's who's making those rankings, whoever put Trask number 48.
Boy, that's rough.
Rough shit. Not a good look.
No. All right. So, do you want to move on to the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, I think so. I do. And I think that I want to speak about the defense just from an overall perspective here.
Okay.
We played a good offense. I don't think there's any questioning that. I think people realized, hey, you know, this offense is pretty good. Matt Corral has a cannon. And I mean, I said before that the dude has an arm. He actually played better than I remember him playing before. Maybe that's a Kiffin thing. Maybe that's just natural development and gaining experience. But he was hitting throws. He was executing. Granted, he had the same kind of dumb mistakes that I saw last year. So I did see some hints of him just he can't let a play go. So he had some mistakes because of that. And I think the Gervin pick might have happened because he just wasn't willing to give up on a play that he probably should have. Shout out to Gervin, though. Nice way to start off your career right there. So, I mean, but overall, I was pretty pleased. The corners, we had some struggling there. And I think part of that, or probably most of that, was due to just not having any safety help, losing Sean Davis right away. Brad Stewart's already suspended. So you're missing your top two safeties. Donovan Steiner's out there, and he's not SEC caliber, at least starting caliber for Florida. It'll be nice to get him swapped out with some of these just more talented South Florida kids that we're bringing in.
Yeah. I went through and rewatched and took notes on the game. And I mean, Steiner was just all over the notes as just what in the fuck is this?
We had a true freshman out there, and they're gonna for Steiner, fourth or fifth year senior.
And Torrance, I mean, he played a lot, and he obviously got picked on some.
I think he had a really bad blown coverage.
Yeah, but for sure. For being a true freshman, being put into that situation, playing what could be the best offense we play all year. I mean, he held his own. It was okay. It wasn't great, but it wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen. And, you know, I think that he's somebody who's going to be able to develop quite a bit down the road. So the tackling. I saw in the post-game press conference, Dan said that they had only had the opportunity to tackle twice since the bowl game. Which, okay, understandable. Understandable with everything that's going on. But it didn't really seem that much better than the tackling that we saw at the beginning of the year last year. Am I crazy here? Is there a method to that madness? Like, I guess I'm assuming what's happening there is that they want to go lighter in practice before the season starts to prevent guys from getting injured, from getting worn down, et cetera, et cetera. But good God, like, we look like such absolute shit for the first 2 weeks of the season on the tackling. And it's like, even if they aren't hitting in practice, like, is there no technique being taught? Because it's just like, it's like when I was playing Madden 2001 when I was a kid, where you would just like switch to the next guy and hit the X button to dive.
Yes, yes.
Just lunging with shoulders all over the place. There's no, like, use your fucking arms, wrap and tackle.
Yeah. And the dive button never actually dives at the player. It's just like random jumping, right, which, yeah. which may or may not apply here, maybe a little bit, but yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. And it was a struggle. We tackled better than Ole Miss, and that's saying zero, because we should be. And Ventro Miller, he was everywhere. I don't know if he was missing any tackles or not. I didn't get to see on TV, so it's harder to. The damn announcer wasn't saying any defensive player names at all. Like, he was refusing, and it was kind of driving me crazy. So I had to, we had some new numbers out there, some new players out there. So I had to pull up a depth chart. It was just kind of hard to keep up. But he looked pretty good. But yeah, other than that, it was kind of a struggle. And we had some that we really should have had either in the backfield or stopped for just a short game. It seemed like a lot of their plays, I mean, yeah, we could get a good stop, but we didn't have those 1 to 3 yard stops really. And maybe that's just me, but you know, when they run the ball or whatever, they'd get 4, 5, 6 yards, and it happened a lot. And that was tackling. It wasn't just they were in position.
It was a combination of things. As you noted, Miller, for sure. He reminded me a lot of David Reese. I mean, he's the new David Reese. He's the new defensive captain, and he's that guy who's sort of a big traditional linebacker who's going to plug the hole in the middle. But, you know, he can't be everywhere. And we had like decent disruption at the line in the against the run, but I don't know, just lots of missed tackles. Even Miller, he did have one that I noted. The long scrambles on third and long from Corral to pick up a first down were absolutely killing me.
It's frustrating. And just another note, though, Corral, he's a good runner.
Oh, yeah, so for sure. For sure.
So there is that. Granted, you have to stop that eventually, but getting beat by a quarterback who can throw it 60 yards downfield and is just going after your lack of safety, your complete lack of safeties, and having him able to run on you on third down, it doesn't drive me as crazy as it would otherwise. I mean, there's a lot of other things that would bother me more.
It doesn't bother me that it happened once or twice, but when he converted, I think it was four of them, and two of them were over 10 yards. One of them was 19 yards. 19 fucking yards.
Do you think we can blame Grantham for that?
I don't know. It's tough because, like, there was so much of players just kind of playing sloppy. It's tough to know how much of that was schematic and how much was just players not doing their job.
It didn't seem like we were throwing the exotic stuff at them. I don't know if that was by design or by necessity with the issues of kind of the suspensions from our top guys. It was interesting. And I mean, we were missing Moon back on the defensive line too. We'll get him back, I think. Having just a little more disruption up front might help, but will it help a ton? I don't know. It's hard. It's hard when you see this multiple years in a row where we just struggle with third downs. So I guess it's something to watch this year. I mean, if it doesn't go away this year, we can probably assume it never will under Grantham.
And I will also add, just because I don't want to be a completely like negative Nancy here. Overall, like the team as a whole, this is on offense and defense, not nearly as sloppy as I was expecting. We only had four penalties. Only one in the second half, took care of the football. And so, you know what? There is something to be said for how they were able to prepare, despite the lack of practice. It was better than I was expecting on that front.
I actually was expecting it to be pretty solid. It seems to be something that Mullen focuses on and he doesn't have issues with. So I sort of expected it. I think before the game, I had put in the pregame thread or one of those threads, I had put some kind of over-unders or pick this or that. And one of them was, do we have more 20-plus yard gains or more penalties? And I was feeling pretty good about it. I thought we'd have the more 20-plus yard gains. I don't know how many we had, but we had to have had more.
I would think so.
Of those. I think maybe even Pitts alone beat the penalty thing. I mean, so yeah, that was that's nice. It's nice to have that. Again, it's just a sign of a well-coached team.
Yeah, for sure. All right. I'm just looking through my notes here. I feel like there was something else I wanted to talk about on defense.
Yeah, I wanted to point out, and I had mentioned this as well beforehand, that we could see a little bit of a sophomore slump from Elam, and he had some struggles. Again, he didn't have a lot of help, so it's hard to say, hey, is this his fault? Is it not? But I think at least some of it was his fault. He did get beat a little bit. And I think he even said that he was pretty pissed off after the game. So that's, I don't think it's anything to worry about. It's just, if you're expecting him to be a top five corner in the country this year, he might not be quite there yet. He might be, but I think he has some things to work on still. I think Marco is probably a guy that we can rely on more this year. And that's no knock on Elam.
It seemed like Marco was playing out of the star quite a bit. Early on, they had, and I don't have the snap count in front of me, but there was a lot of Jaden Hill mixed in early.
He had almost the exact same as Kimbrough. I think it was like maybe 40 snaps a pop, somewhere around there.
Yeah. And those guys, they both looked solid. Kimbrough was like the only player I really noted other than Miller who looked like he was actually enjoying hitting people Like, there's something about the way that guy plays that is, like, he's gleeful about being able to put his hands on people, which is really fun. That's refreshing.
We might see him a lot more at Star. There's a chance that we had put Marco at Star just to cover Elijah Moore this time, because he has experience covering him. They played, I think, around the same time back in South Florida. Yeah. And Moore was by far Ole Miss's best receiving weapon, so maybe it just worked out that way. Yep. It'd be kind of nice. Yeah, he did look like he wanted to hit people. I like that. I like that a lot.
I don't know if you want to use the depth chart. I was going to talk about how it seems like the depth chart thing didn't really stick.
Yeah, it is. All you people freaking out need to shut the hell up and just chill. Like, that's all I got to say about it. Everybody freaking out about McWilliams. I mean, there were a lot of freakouts.
Yeah.
We knew from last year. He lies. He doesn't give a real depth chart. Like, what do you care? It's just let it play out and then freak out. So if McWilliams had played, 30 snaps, I would have been kind of ticked off. But he played, five? And yeah, it's five more than I wanted him to. But that's not bad.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we talked about. Don't believe the things that Dan Mullen says publicly. It's misdirection at almost every turn.
There's plenty of tape in McWilliams. Can you imagine if he actually started, like Lane Kiffin sees that? I mean, yeah. He'd be licking his chops. He'd be like, oh, he's covering Elijah Moore? Okay, yeah. Every play.
It's not Jim Chaney over there. It's not going to take him an entire half to realize, oh, hey, I should attack the guy who is completely incapable of playing at this level. I guess that's something else I wanted to talk about was there's so much of us on defense that wasn't even necessarily us being bad and just Ole Miss being good. Like, I was blown away by how, like, completely prepared they were. Their play calling throughout the game was excellent. I had been skeptical at times of Kiffin, at least as a head coach. But my God, just his ability to get offensive guys prepared and ready to play is incredible. They looked so good.
He got them in the right spots, right situations, right matchups. And honestly, I mean, they were executing too. I think I mentioned it earlier, but like they weren't fucking up. Like no real bad. Like the one drop I remember was the damn quarterback going out in the trick play. Like, who cares? That happens. It's just they played well. And they were hitting the throws, getting their catches. Some were wide open, some were covered decently, and yeah, they did a good job.
You gotta feel good about their ceiling there. Is this the best offense that we will play this year in the regular season?
Hands down. It's hard to think that any offense would come close. The only one capable of coming close would be Georgia. I don't even think A&M's even capable of it. I really don't.
No.
I mean, Mond can move, so he's got that sort of rushing quarterback threat thing, but the skill positions just aren't at the same level. And Jimbo doesn't run the style of offense that, I mean, he runs an offense that can work. It's just not this scary, I'm going to beat you by, I'm going to put up 40 points on you, even with crappy players. So, I mean, maybe Georgia figures it out with, if they get a new quarterback by the time, and like they just have the guy that, sucks all year and then just shows out against us, which.
Yeah, that's happened.
Isn't the craziest thing. I mean, I could see that happening in theory. Not that it's happened before, right?
As you mentioned. They cleared Daniels medically today.
Whatever that's worth, that could just be Kirby throwing Auburn stuff out. But what Mathis lasted a half?
I think it was a half. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I'm surprised he got the start in the first place. But is anybody surprised?
It's one of the. I mean, that's like sort of the big question is, can they look better than they have? I guess we could talk about that more once we get into recapping other games.
We'll have plenty of Georgia talk, I'm sure, throughout the year too. But to answer your question quickly, yes, I think that is the best offense we will see. And honestly, I think it's the best by a good bit. There might be one or two teams that can come close, and everybody else is just a huge step or two below at the very minimum.
It feels good to get that Band-Aid ripped, like right off the bat. Like that's the worst it can be. So
Can you imagine like having Mississippi State as like the second to last game or something?
Oh, Jesus.
Like, instead of Kentucky. Yeah, we'd be like, oh, motherfucker. Like, even if we go into that undefeated, like, that's just asking for an upset right there. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Pretty pleased.
On special teams, Evan McPherson is just a fucking robot. That guy, he just does not miss. Really, really fucking good.
His kick looked like it would have gone another 5 or 10 yards too. That one long one.
Yeah,
it's not often you get compliments from opposing fan bases, and it's really not often that you get compliments in a special teamers. But I had 2 or 3 people mention our kicker, so take that for what it's worth.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah.
Punt and kick returns were handled by Tony. You know, nothing really explosive that I saw from him there, but. He looked like competent. You know, I wasn't terrified with him back there. You know, that he was going to fumble. It was fine. And that's kind of what you're looking for in a return man most of the time.
Yeah. Especially when you don't have somebody that's just super dynamic. I'm not sure returns really fit his skill set as much. He seems good when he can just get the defense on their heels and just find like these one-on-one matchups rather than a return. Yeah, you're facing more of a whole group rather than, oh, here's like a one-on-one guy I can beat one after another.
And I think he could actually handle it from that standpoint, but he just doesn't really have like top-end speed. He's really good at accelerating, but I mean, we kind of saw it this past week. His big run that he had on, I think it was a reverse. He like, you know, he made it through the entire defense and then he got chased down from behind.
Yeah, he broke a couple tackles, burst through, he gained separation, and then they did take, yeah. they got him. So yeah, that's what we get from him. I'm cool with it.
Yep, I'm totally fine with it. As soon as we move on, I know there's going to be like a dozen things that I think of that I wanted to talk about here.
Yeah. That's how it works. You know, it's just another note, I guess, on the defense. I don't think we need to get overly freaked out here. There are clearly some issues tackling, maybe some questions about game planning and how we can handle up the middle again without the defensive tackle depth we want or the safeties that we want. There are questions there, but we're playing a great offense that had 2 different quarterbacks that we had to prep for. We had to remember that too. Like, we had to put in a whole bunch of game planning with Amari Burney being able to watch Plumlee whenever he came in the game as a running threat. You know, both those quarterbacks are mobile, and Kiffin's just a great game planner. Plus, we don't have any like film of them or anything like that. So it's just, I wouldn't get too up in arms about it. So maybe watch this South Carolina game and see if Muschamp can score 35 points on us. And if he does, then you can be terrified.
Yeah, that would do it for me.
that would be very successful doing it.
I'm not in panic mode yet. I think that was a combination of lack of time to really truly prepare the way that you would hope, because of COVID for us, and a lot of holes that will probably be filled fairly quickly here, combined with a really good opposing offense.
Yeah, so I guess. Those are my thoughts on the game. You have anything else?
No, I think that's pretty much it. Overall, just really happy with it. It was a fun game to watch, and that's what you hope for. This is entertainment, after all.
Exactly.
All right, so I guess that's pretty much all of our thoughts on last week's game. Let's move into talking about next week's game against South Carolina. It's also going to be a noon kick. It's going to be back in Florida. Florida, we are currently favored by 18.5 points. That's as of Monday evening when we're recording this. I mean, I feel pretty confident that we're going to win this game. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts?
Does that feel high, that 18 points? It just feels kind of high for a game against Muschamp.
It certainly, I mean, yeah, I would think, just because of the nature of their ability to ugly games up, that's sort of their thing.
Yeah, maybe I'm just used to not having much of an offense to prevent uglying games up. I don't know.
Yeah.
It would be nice to just blow them out, and I can see us having having the ability, but it's Muschamp. And I'll be blunt with everybody here. I didn't do a ton of game prep, but who needs to? This is Will Muschamp. We know exactly what we're going to get. He doesn't change. He is him. He knows it. Everybody knows it. So what more is there to it? We know what we're going to get from this game.
Yeah. I don't have much, like, as far as profound thoughts here. I watched most of their game against Tennessee, and then I kind of skimmed through it again this afternoon. And, man, this South Carolina team is, they're just like fucking oatmeal flavored Cheerios. There's nothing that stood out to me as, oh yeah, they do this really well. They have one player, Shy Smith. He's like a receiver and sort of an all-purpose type of player. And he's really good. I mean, he accounted for an overwhelming percentage of their offense, it seemed like. And I mean, he's a legit threat. I mean, he's a real playmaker. But other than him, I don't know where they're going to get yards, really. I suppose that is dependent upon how good or bad our defense looks, but there was nothing exciting about it.
At the quarterback look, did you get a chance to watch him much?
Yeah, he was decent. He was replacement level. He looked experienced. His name is Colin Hill. I think that's his name. Give me just a second. I'm going to pull up their box score.
Honestly, you could have said literally any name and I would have rolled with it and said, yeah, that's definitely Jared Garantano. Yeah, that's South Carolina quarterback.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they have Mike Bobo as their offensive coordinator now. And I think this is the kid who followed him over from Colorado State as a transfer, if memory serves correctly. And yeah, he threw for 290 yards. I don't know. It seemed like maybe they didn't trust their offensive line a whole lot. They were breaking down somewhat quickly. The pocket was on quite a few plays that I noticed. Tennessee is strong up front, so it could have just been that. Yeah, there was nothing that stood out to me as particularly notable about them. They ran the ball well at times, but overall, I don't think that they ran particularly well. Let's see. Yeah, they only had 2.5 yards per carry. There's just nothing. Like, as far as offensive skill players, they just don't really have anything.
So we had Muschamp for a few years, and we've played him now a few times from the South Carolina perspective. Like, has he ever brought anybody that you're just like, oh man, this guy actually really terrifies me? Like, he always has like one player who's decent, like a decent receiver usually, but then it's just a bunch of nothing. So I mean, basically we have to beat ourselves and not score in order to fuck this game up, in my mind.
Yeah, like offensively, it's almost always the same formula too. Like, they'll have one really good guy offensively, and this year it looks like it's Shy Smith. And then, like, for some reason, they'll get injured like midway through the year, and then they'll just be injured on and off or completely out for the rest of the year. And then it's like Will just looks around and throws his hands up, and he's like, "Well, fuck, I don't know what to do now." Like,
I'm gonna force some punts. Let's do this.
Defensively, you know, they were solid. It didn't scare the shit out of me. It was fine. It's difficult to know watching a team play defense against Tennessee's offense, especially early in the year, how much is the defense being good versus Tennessee just being shitty.
Tennessee scored some points, though. Was that like, did they have any turnovers or anything? Like, how'd they get that? Pick sixes or something, because they scored what, almost 30 points on them?
They did have one pick six. Tennessee did.
Okay, that would explain it.
And Garantano looked pretty much the same. I mean, he was fine at times, inconsistent. Tennessee looks like sort of, I understand more and more why Phil Fulmer wanted to hire Pruitt, because it kind of reminds me of, like, you know, that early 2000s type of look. Like, they're a big physical football team, and they want to play like road grader type of ball.
Maybe more suited to do what Will Muschamp wants to do.
Yeah, it really does seem like it. Yeah, I don't really have a whole lot more to say about South Carolina.
I have something to say, because I only saw a little bit of the game, but I saw the best part, and that was when they decided with three minutes left, maybe? Was it three or four minutes left? They decided, oh, we're down seven. Let's kick a field goal. That way, instead of having to score a touchdown after getting the ball back, we'll have to score a touchdown after getting the ball back. My God, that is the most Muschamp move ever.
Yeah.
Is he? What? I mean, I don't want, I can't call him a coward or anything, but is he? Like, or is he just stupid? Why does he do that?
It's like, at times, it's like he's trying to lose. Like,
it's like a tick. He just can't help it.
Yeah. It just doesn't make any damn sense. Yeah. I mean, and then, like, you know, to add insult to injury, they fumble the, they do actually, like, they did the hard part. Like, they stopped Tennessee.
The unlikely thing.
Yeah. They, I think, we probably both saw the, what Spencer Hall wrote about it. Like, you know, they set themselves up for failure and multiple failure points, and they actually did the difficult parts, at least on defense, and they got the stop, and then they just, they don't even fumble the punt. It just, like, bounces off of their guy's leg, and it's just, yep, that's ball game.
It's just, but that's what makes it Muschamp. Like, yeah, he can do some of these just crazy things, like get the stops when he needs to, but again, you're just, you're adding so many different variables. You're counting on so many different things to happen instead of saying, hey, you know what? I want to win this. Let's just, let's go win this. Let's put this on our hands instead of just hoping that a lot of things go. I mean, when you're relying on the defense, it's not like you're putting it in the defense's hand. You have to get the ball back too. You have to hope that they don't call a trick play that isn't like completely blaming your defense. You don't just have to stop them on three downs. Maybe you have to stop them on a fourth down. You have to not have an unlucky penalty. Like, what if you get a pass interference? That's bullshit. It's just, it's the dumbest thing on the planet. So again, vintage Muschamp.
Yeah. They don't play to win games. They play to not lose games. And that's how you lose games.
Yep. He loved it, though. I mean, I'm sure he does not even regret that decision slightly. Like, he doesn't think twice about it. He's like, yeah, I made the right call. I know I did.
Yeah.
We just didn't execute.
Yeah. So, do you want to pick a projected outcome here?
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, well, while I did mention that I thought it was a highest point spread, I think we can actually do that too, because again, I just don't believe in Muschamp, and if you have an offense that works against him, it can be nice. So I think we're going to do it again. I think we're going to score a bunch of points. I'll call it, let's go 45-23. Okay. Gators.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to say that our defense finds themselves. They do some soul searching. They get their shit together. I'm going to say 42-20. Yeah, that sounds about right. I'll say 42-20. Although, you know, I don't know. I guess this is a question of, is our defense better than Tennessee's defense right now? And I don't know, because Tennessee let them score 27. Okay, so I'm going to go 42-24. I'll say 42-24. The Gators roll, and it's not a game that is ever really in question.
Yeah. First of all, you have Muschamp. So you never have to, even if you're down, you're like, you know what? I think we can do this. But I would agree. I like that. It's a good pick. And just, I guess, one more thing on this. We didn't really review our prior picks. Like, do we need to do that at all? Because I think I had some comments. I think I had a comment on that I wanted to make. I think I went ahead. You know, when you do well, you want to brag about it. When you when you fuck it up, you want to just ignore it, pretend it didn't happen. So we're going to go with the bragging route this time. For the Ole Miss game, I think I had taken us to win 38-27. Somewhere in that realm.
I think you went 38. Yeah, I think it was 38-27.
It was something like that. And I think each team had basically one more touchdown. And a lot of that, I think, was just better execution than I expected, and maybe missing some players. If Sean Davis played in that game, I'm pretty convinced that we would have had some stops on those long balls. Rather than Ole Miss scoring in 12 seconds, you know, maybe they'll drive the field and only score in, you know, 5 or 6 minutes or something like that. So I think that was kind of the difference there. I think we all had similar predictions, but for once, I feel pretty spot on with that one. So, you know, maybe we'll keep that rolling.
Yeah, you nailed it, except it would have been two more touchdowns for Florida because 38 plus 7 is not 51.
You know what? You're right. I undervalued our offense, and that is shameful. It won't happen again.
And God help the people whose taxes you prepare.
Yeah, you know, it's not my job to worry about numbers.
Right. Yes.
We'll go with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Boy, that's a philosophical thinker right there. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about our predictions last week on point spreads. And maybe talk a little bit about these games as we go through them. Yeah. We both took Kentucky to cover 7.5.
Oh, fuck Kentucky.
Or to beat 7.5, to beat the 7.5 point spread against Auburn. They did not do that. I watched some of that game. There was a particularly frustrating sequence right before halftime that really made me lose a lot of respect for SEC officials. Respect that I already didn't have for SEC officials.
what little there was.
Yeah, it was rough. It was rough. Both teams kind of got... That game looked pretty much exactly how I thought it would. It was... If you didn't watch it, it's exactly what you would imagine it was. What's his name? Bo Nix. Bo Nix, he looked slightly better passing the ball. Not great, but slightly better.
Did he look like a potential Heisman contender?
No, I would have to say that he didn't. I would have to say that particular narrative is mercifully slowly beginning to die out.
That'd be nice. Man, Kentucky, what a disappointment. I actually thought they were going to win the game, and they went and did whatever the hell they did. So, big letdown, Stoops. What are you doing?
Yep. We both picked Miami to cover 11 against Florida State, and boy, did they ever.
Was there any doubt ever?
No. Like, that was incredible.
I think I was in the Discord enjoying the mockery, and it was maybe 21-3 or 28-3 or something like that. And at that point I was like, I want them to win 70-3. I just think it would be the most hilarious thing ever. And honestly, they probably could have if they had tried. Have.
Yeah. So something I started doing a couple of years ago, was really, really like bathing myself in the schadenfreude of the Florida State situation by listening to some of their podcasts. And, I went and I deleted all of those podcasts off of my phone. I couldn't stomach the positivity that was coming out with their, you know, new coaching hire over the summer. Right. And I thought, well, the golden age is probably coming to an end here. But boy, I had to fire those back up this weekend.
Hop back on, subscribe. Let's go. Roll them up.
It was really funny. Wait,
have you listened to them?
Yeah. I've just listened to the one, episode of the Nullcast, which is Bud Elliott's podcast. He did like a solo, instant reaction show. And he didn't even wait until the game was over. He recorded it at halftime. It was 38-3.
Oh, my God. That is great.
It. Oh, man, it was great. It was very enjoyable.
Yeah, this one's done. Oh, man, I just love reading some of their comments when they say how every single one of their beat writers hates their team. And that's great. Like, I mean, I know we like to say that our beat writers are snitches and don't root for us. But I don't know if any of us say like they're actively rooting for us to lose necessarily. Like I don't think we think they actually hit the team. So
no. Yeah.
It's a nice I don't know if it's a mental spin or what, but it's very enjoyable to read that.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, maybe I'll have to check some of those out too when I get some free time.
Okay, so we split on South Carolina and Tennessee.
Yeah. I think I got that wrong.
You did. Yeah, I hit that 3.5 points. So that's a win for me.
Fucking Muschamp. My God, like, he completely fucked that one up. And I honestly had them winning outright, and I probably should have known better, but...
Right. I mean, you know, it's defensible, because Tennessee has been garbage early in the season for the past few years, but I will say one of my takeaways from that game was that outcome is pretty representative of where I think those teams are right now. I think that, like, we're trying to figure out who is number 3 in the East this year. And yeah, I mean, I think we can eliminate South Carolina from that list.
And probably Kentucky.
Would that be
fair, or is that unfair with Auburn?
I think that's a little early just because there were some things in that game where Kentucky actually outgained them, I think, in total yardage. And it's one of those things where, like, I could see Kentucky winning that game in a bizarro universe with a couple of different bounces. Yeah, I'm not ready to say that. I'm not ready to eliminate Kentucky there.
So that score wasn't really representative of the game necessarily.
So for me, the thing that happened just before halftime that we briefly touched on was that Kentucky scored a touchdown. Like, if you go back and you look at the replay, like, they got well into the end zone. It's clear. I do not know what the review official was, like, high on or drunk on, but it was some good shit because, like, they were clearly into the end zone.
Big Kush. Yeah.
Yeah. The Kush was too big. And so they should have gone in. That was just before halftime. They should have gone in at halftime with, like, a touchdown lead. And they didn't because they turned the ball over on the next play because Terry Wilson is somewhat careless with the football at times. Yeah, I mean, like, I think that's a very different game if they get that touchdown call. Stick a fork in us because we are done. We ran out of tape for the machine. Actually, we were having some technical issues and we were running out of time in our recording window, so we just decided to call it a night. And we're going to try to record another little mini episode later this week where we talk about some of this week's upcoming games and maybe some other stuff too. Admittedly, our preview of the South Carolina game was a little bit half-assed. If you want a more in-depth preview, Stev and Chi-Town Gator, the two Discord mods, have put together some pretty good content this week. So if you're a part of the Discord, check that out. And if you're not a part of the Discord, you should go join the Discord. It's free, and it's really cool, and a bunch of us hang out there pretty much every day. Okay, I think that's it. Thank you for listening. Go Gators.